Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Tuesday 7th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Tim Ma-fucking Geddes.
You kind of roboted it out there for a second, but did you say Tuesday?
Monday, December 7th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Tim Ma-fucking Geddes.
What, Tim, host? How you doing, Bless?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. We are just days away now from Cyberpunk 2077 being a reality. Reviews are out. You have beat the game. I am so jealous of you. And I'm also very proud of you. You put in a lot of work last week to make sure
that
could get done. But yeah, but you did the damn thing. We're going to talk about all that later.
We're, of course, going to talk about all about that. That's why I said Tuesday, because it feels like a Tuesday, because I've been working nonstop. It does not feel like a Monday to me, let me tell you. But we're going to talk about that and so much more, because today's stories include Cyberpunk 2077 reviews dropping, Nintendo needing to be stopped, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, at the patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post-show. Housekeeping for you, our Cyberpunk 2077 review is live right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on the Kind of Funny Games Cast podcast feed. That is me, Greg, and Tim sitting down to talk all about that good old Cyberpunk 2077. I'm the only one that's played it and beat it over here at Kind of Funny, and so it's my review. I believe next week we'll be doing a more full review with way more perspectives outside of just me. And so
I doubt it would be a full review. This was the full review. Next week's going to be more like first impressions from everyone, because you're the only one at Kind of Funny that's got to play this game at all. You had back with the preview and then playing the full game. None of us have got our hands on it, so.
Yeah, and so I know a lot of you thinking like, oh, is this the reason Blessing was hiding his trophies? No, because I was playing this game on PC, and so you get my full PC impressions. Everyone. Yeah, so was everyone, because those are the only codes they gave out, but we'll talk about that again later. If you have any Cyberpunk questions, or if you just want to learn more about the game or whatever it may be, you can write in to PSW XOXO. We're recording later today, and the topic of the show for this week's episode is going to be me answering your questions, your Cyberpunk 2077 questions answered. And so do that. Me and Greg, I think, are recording even earlier today, and so you might want to do that quicker than usual if you want to get your questions answered. Speaking of Cyberpunk, Andy is going to be streaming some Cyberpunk 2077, showing off ray tracing and all that goodness on his NVIDIA RTX 3080. That's happening first on Tuesday, December 10th, from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific time, and then again on Tuesday, December 15th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by Quip, Trojan, and BetterHelp, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the World Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories today.
Baker's Dozen.
Starting with our number one, we got a Cyberpunk 2077 review roundup. That's right. Reviews are live right now on Metacritic, or at least when I checked on Metacritic, it's sitting at a 90, and I have quite a few excerpts from multiple different sources that I'm going to read through here. Though at the top of the doc, I see somebody inserted a special review.
Just Nico514 in the chat says, Cyberpunk is a snoozer, confirmed. And damn. I just want to give a shout out to Kevin Coelho, because I keep giving him credit for this, but he keeps referring randomly to things as like stinkers or snoozers. And like, I just think it just brings me such fucking joy, even though it sounds like that is a wrong assessment of the situation. But
that's good. That's great. I'm going to start off with Tom Marks at IGN, who gave Cyberpunk a 9 out of 10 and says this. Cyberpunk 2077 kicks you into its beautiful and dazzlingly dense cityscape with few restrictions. It offers a staggering amount of choice in how you build your character, approach quests, and confront enemies, and your decisions can have a tangible and natural feeling impact on both the world around you and the stories of the people who inhabit it. Those stories can be emotional, funny, dark, exciting, and sometimes all of those things at once. The main quest may be shorter than expected when taken on its own, and it's not always clear what you need to do to make meaningful changes to its finale, but the multitude of side quests available almost from the start can have a surprisingly powerful effect on the options you have when you get there. It's a shame that frustratingly frequent bugs can occasionally kill an otherwise well-set mood, but Cyberpunk 2077's impressively flexible design makes it a truly remarkable RPG. Carolyn Petit at Polygon gave it an unscored review and says this: "I can't deny that Night City wowed me with its scale, its verticality, and its sense of history, but I wish I could see people like me on its streets as something more than objects. I wish that the game's politics were more radical. Yes, I know I shouldn't look to a colossal game that was itself produced under exploitative labor conditions to lead the charge of anti-capitalist liberation, but I wish the sparks of Johnny Silverhand's ideological rage got to burn brighter. That Cyberpunk 2077 felt more interested in envisioning new futures than in reminiscing over bygone glories. Neither its gameplay nor its narrative can imagine the bold possibilities that I find so central to the best of Cyberpunk. But what it does offer is visions of people trying to make do and get by in a world that's trying to eat them alive. And sometimes those people get by with a little help from their friends. It's not the revolution I hoped for, but it's something." And then lastly, I have this excerpt from James Davenport at PC Gamer, who gave it a 78 out of 100 and says this: "Even if you can nosedive V into a life of crime and greed, the repercussions highlight what's possible in the relief of what you reject in favor of power and money. Cyberpunk 2077 is a game about close relationships, or if you're role-playing a more cold-hearted type, seeing what life is like at the top without them. I found it moving and life-affirming in the final moments, even in the face of near certain death and relentless onslaught of bugs. I suppose it's an appropriate thematic throughline, though. Cyberpunk 2077 is a game about V coming apart at the seams, in a city coming apart at the seams, in a game coming apart at the seams. Play it in a few months." Which, wow, like that, I like that write up. Like, I agree and disagree a little bit in certain parts, but I think they hit the nail on the head in terms of what Cyberpunk 2077 is doing thematically. Tim. Mm-hmm. Seeing these reviews, are you surprised? Do you have any thoughts?
Look, I'm surprised. No, I do wish that it was getting tens across the board. I wish it was deserving of tens across the board. Obviously, is the way I meant to say that. This was kind of looked at as the chosen one, right? Like, this was building up. This game has been talked about for a decade of hype. And everything about it just oozes cool. And it seems like that's something that I want to do, even for people like me that don't traditionally like that type of game. But after The Witcher 3 and how, you know, unanimously praised that game was, especially for its, you know, quests and side quests and all and character and all of that, like applying that to this Cyberpunk world and everything that we've seen of this game up until the last year, honestly, was just kind of like, wow, this is perfect. This is perfect.
Yeah, this is like perfect. This is the future.
And then this year, like, you know, a little, like when people started playing it and we started seeing a bit more and the Night City Wire stuff started happening and just like there was a lot. I feel like we kind of got over-marketed on the game a bit. Mm-hmm. That's when everything started to end, the crunch talk and all that. Like, that things started to set in a bit more where I was like, I don't think this is going to get tens. And so these reviews, at the end of the day, do not surprise me. I feel very happy that the worst about this game, it seems like from reviews, is the bugs, because all of that stuff seems like things that can be fixed. Me and you talked a lot about this. It seems like the number one con through line between everyone's reviews is it's buggy as hell, but that's stuff you can patch out.
I think that's the stuff that is going to be consistent through so many people's playthroughs, and we'll see with the day one patch how that stuff actually pans out to see if like how much of these bugs are actually fixed, or even when the game gets in people's hands, like if those things still persist. I imagine on the console versions, those things are probably going to still persist, because now that reviews are out, right, and we can actually like talk about it. All the reviews, if you look, are PC reviews, because those are the only codes they provided. And from what we've understood from reports and everything, it seems like the console versions of this game are the versions that they've been working on. That's what they've been delaying for and all this stuff. The PC version seems to be presumably what I imagine the most stable version. And if that's the case, we'll see how these console versions pan out. But when we talk about the bugs and how, yeah, that's the through line between so many people's reviews, I think that is the most consistent thing. But it's been interesting reading different reviews and seeing the different things people pull from it. Carolyn's review here, right, talking about seeing people like me treated as objects, I think is a thing that I've seen so many people allude to in terms of the way that cyberpunk treats certain people groups, or cyberpunk treats trans folks or certain races in terms of the depiction within different gangs and stuff. All that stuff, I think, is going to be stuff that is taken from different people in so many different ways. We're like, in my playthrough of cyberpunk, I think the first thing I noticed during the character creation was the fact that your character gender is tied to voice, and it seemed like there wasn't really any non-binary option. And that's like a thing that I think for me is very visible as somebody who is not trans, right? I'm like a straight dude. Like, that was the thing where I was like, huh, okay, that's weird. I don't necessarily love that decision. And then like I go in and I play the game, and I'm sure there are these other things that I probably could pick apart, or I could see as like, oh fuck, what are they doing here? But I don't necessarily have that lens, right? Like, I'm playing the game as Blessing, which means the things that I'm going to be taking away as far as critiques I have are things that are going to strike me personally. And like for me, outside of bugs, that was things like, wow, this game is trying really hard to be edgy at times. And at points it works, because that kind of does feed into the thematic nature of cyberpunk. Like, cyberpunk is this thing that is, you know, filled with adult themes, filled with sex, filled with violence, filled with fucking people getting limbs chopped off and all this stuff, right? But on the other hand, it's like, for me playing the game, you know, there were parts where I was like, all right, maybe we could tone this down a bit. All right, maybe we can be a little bit more subtle about
this. You're holding back right now. Say it.
All right, maybe there does need to be so many dildos in this game. All right, there you go. I said it. Why is there dildos everywhere? Everywhere. But for me, like, that's going to be my experience, right? And it's actually fun talking about this game as an RPG, which means so many people are going to have so many different types of experiences. Not only just bringing in their own views and their own life experience, but also in terms of how they navigate that world and what routes they go down and what missions they encounter and what characters they encounter and all that stuff. And so, like, bugs are like the common thing between everybody's review, but I'm sure, like, reading the reviews that I've read today, there are things that people are pointing out where I'm like, man, I wouldn't have thought about that that way, but that's a good point as far as this thing that I either missed or that I just wouldn't have that worldview, right? And it's very fascinating to see. But yeah, like, it's been fast. This is a fun game to talk about finally, because now that reviews are out and it's not getting straight up tens across the board, and it is getting nines, it is getting, I think Jeff Grubb over at GamesBeat gave it a 3 out of 5 stars. Like, I find that conversation way
more. 7 over at GameSpot.
Really? Got a 7? Mm-hmm. Damn, dude. But I find that conversation interesting, because I think that paints a broader depiction in terms of what this deep, complex, complicated game is. Because that was my experience with this game. My experience with this game was this game being fucking beautiful, it being you know, deep in terms of mechanics, but then also in terms of quests and writing and all this stuff. But then it also being this tug of war between Night City being this living, breathing open world, but then also like certain parts of the writing not necessarily landing with me from the broad, like, I forget which one of these reviews pointed to, like, the anti-capitalist stuff not feeling like it went all the way at certain times, right? And I kind of felt that too in my gameplay. But at the same time, right, there are those points where there are great character moments that in themselves shined even within that. Like, it's this weird hodgepodge of a different of different things, and it's going for so much, and a lot of those things it doesn't live up to, and some of those things it does. And overall, it's just fascinating to see for such a big anticipated game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited for it, and I feel like there is a lot of interesting conversation happening right now, and obviously so few people have even played the game, so yeah. Right now it's a lot of people's talking about opinions of opinions, but you know, we personally know at least a couple people that have now played this game, and so hearing their views is really interesting to me, and I'm excited and a little trepidatious about figuring out how this is going to play on consoles and how it's going to play on different types of PC situations. Like, I know, mm-hmm. You just played it on a normal PC. Like, you didn't have the RTX stuff. You didn't have ray tracing. You didn't have
I didn't have the NVIDIA card required for ray tracing. But I do have, like, a good PC graphics card. Like, for context, right, I played everything on ultra settings. And so, like, it ran well for the PC I had, despite bugs, right? Like, it worked. Speaking of reviews, though, I have this question from the nanobiologist who wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, hey guys, the day has finally arrived, cyberpunk reviews. But I want to ask a question about the other side of the industry and outlets. Based on yours and other major outlets reporting, y'all only got one code for PC. Consoles aren't available for testing 4 days before release. What the fuck? Is this a glorious shit show for everyone? Did the monkey paw lower a finger when everyone wanted Cyberpunk to come out this year? I got an email last week saying that US codes aren't available for distribution yet and won't be until this week. While code distributions are a benefit and not a right, how is this fair for those who are smaller creators and those whose livelihoods rely on good guides for these big games? The PC was a buggy mess, so if the console versions aren't ready yet, how can we expect the launch for the console version to run smoothly? Of course, I'm speaking from a place that is lucky to even see this side of the industry, but still, this seems like a horror show and shows the negative sides of everything in the industry, from those who want to review the game to the guide writers to even the PR people who have to handle the backlash of industry people who can say nothing more than the codes are coming. Thanks, the nanobiologist. There's a lot in there. Tim, I don't know if you have anything to say as far as like the review situation of the game.
I have so much to say about this, man. Like, this is the thing is, and I think this is going to be a common statement that I make throughout this episode of the show, if some news stories are coming later involving Nintendo, I expect. The thing is, there's always going to be a difference between how things should be, how things are, and what is right. And all of those can be happening at the same time, but all be different. And like, that could create some weird, scary situations and upsetting situations more often than not. And I think when it comes to this, look, we've seen so many different groups come out and just be like, we're not even going to put reviews out for games, period. The game comes out the day it comes out and people can play when they get it, and that's it, right? Bethesda has done that, right?
They tried that.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, that has its own set of backlash, right? There's no standard when it comes to how game codes are going to be released and whatever. And it was definitely surprising to us, as kind of funny, as people that have been doing this for a long time, that we only got one code for the whole entire team. I expected this game. Like, if you were to have asked me 4 months ago what the process for Cyberpunk was going to be for reviews, I would have thought that they would have been like, who wants a code? Everyone on the team gets one if they want. Which is very anti-Nintendo, which is you get one code.
Yeah.
Just one code. So when we only got one code from CD Projekt Red, that did feel bizarre. However, I think it's clear right now of why they're trying to do that. I think that the only having a PC version and not console versions isn't as ridiculous as it sounds. They're trying to push the PC version. It is the one that has all the next gen features and stuff right now. So I understand that is them trying to put that out there. Of course, we all want to know the experience that a lot, maybe even potentially the majority of people are going to get, which is on consoles. But all the reviewers are making it clear that this is the PC version and that the version that they're reviewing here is the PC version of this game, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's this weird tug of war between what the CD Projekt Red wants and what reviewers want and then what consumers want. And I think it's impossible to make all three of those people happy because they all have such radically different desires and needs that don't fit with each other. So I don't know. I'm also seeing a lot of discourse about the CD Projekt Red's not allowing people to use their own captured footage for their video reviews. That happens a lot for games. I think that it's very easy to look at what CD Projekt Red has done with Cyberpunk and pick it apart. Because guess what? There's a lot to pick apart. There's a lot of shit here that's like, ooh, this should have been a lot better. Like this rollout plan. If this game was a 10, if this game was finished, honestly, guess what? All of Kind of Funny would have had it by now, because that's just how this usually works in the industry when games are that way.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, frankly, like, I think the review situation, the review rollout for this game has been bad. Like, to put people in my shoes, right? Like, we got the review code for this game, Monday, less than a week ago, right? Like, we got it, like, on Tuesday. And right before that, I believe, were the reports of one of the devs saying, I am 175 hours into this playthrough and I haven't even beaten the game yet. And so for me, getting the code on Tuesday and then seeing that the embargo lifts on Monday, like, doing the math, I was like, I don't even think there's 175 hours between now and the embargo. Like, how am I supposed to get through this game that I don't know how long it is? Thankfully, the game ended up being it ended up taking me 28 hours. But even still, for a game that is so long, for a game that is so deep, for a game that has so much in it, that's even rolling the credits for this game doesn't feel like enough to give my final stamp on this game. I can give my final stamp for where I'm at right now and having done the main story and having had my experience for my first playthrough of this game. But even then, it doesn't feel like enough time to review Cyberpunk 2077. That said, bringing in the lack of console reviews, right, and the fact that it seems like people still don't have console codes yet, I think that just speaks badly about the console version of this game. Like, that makes me think the console version of this game is probably going to be broken in a lot of ways, and people should probably wait for it, wait for reviews, like wait for actual launch day to come through and see what people are saying about it before you actually pick it up. If you want to be safe about it, if you want to take the risk, take the risk. I'm not going to stop you. And I get, like, feeling hungry for a game, hungry enough that you're willing to take that risk, go for it. But if I was in the shoes of people waiting for the console version of this game, I would wait a day. I would wait a week maybe and be like, I'm going to, you know, see what people have to say. Because again, this isn't ideal. I think this speaks to the fact that the console version is coming in hot, and we'll see how that thing lands.
I mean, but dude, like, again, you have to look at just the reality of the situation of what everyone's trying to get out of this, because the console version might be coming in hot. It sounds like the PC version did too, with how buggy it is, right? With the, why would they be getting this in even anyone's hands to put a numbered score on when it's in the state that it is, if they could choose not to do that? Because guess what? They could choose not to do that. They could have just not put reviews out. You know what I mean? Like, they could have just come the 10th and let everyone have their experience, and it is what it is. They made the choice to do this, and it worked for them. The Metacritic score currently right now stands at a 91 as of right now. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, game developers aren't looking at review scores for, like, the kindness of their heart. It's marketing. Oh,
yeah, for sure. I mean, 100%. But I think this kind of also comes back to the fact that I think in a perfect world, this game would have been delayed again. Like, this game, I don't think this game should have came out in this state with what I perceive the console version is it being like still in development, right? Still coming in hot, right? Like, I think obviously this comes down to business, and this comes down to them already having delayed this game like multiple times, and them being like, we have to get this thing out probably about holiday for whatever the investor shit is. And I think that speaks to an unfortunate situation on all sides. Granted, I think you're correct. Like, the worst that they're getting out of this, CD Projekt Red is getting out of this, is talk of bugs and talk of, like, you know, not even mixed reviews, because it's sitting on a 91, but like, not tens across the board, which I don't think they necessarily need. Like, I don't think they're even looking for that. Like, I don't know if Witcher 3 even got tens across the board. I think that probably had like somewhat of a similar landing as far as being in a 91-93 in that realm. But again, like, I just don't think it's the best look as far as what's good for the audience and what's good for press to do it this way. And
yeah,
so,
no, I mean, it's definitely, it's interesting, and I think that every time a major game has this type of scrutiny when it comes to embargoes and just game codes and stuff, it's going to change the process for the future. That's just how this always works. And people are, like Nanobiologist was writing and talking about being on the other side. There are more people on the other side than ever right now because of where we're at with the internet and things, where the difference between being an influencer, being games media, being whatever, it's like so much shit is blurred. And at the end of the day, the again, it goes back to what I was saying, where it's just like there are so many different, it's the tug of war of needs. And it's never going to be what everyone wants, because that doesn't exist. It actually works against, they're working against each other in a very Charmander, Squirtle, Bulbasaur type situation.
Tim, you mentioned earlier Nintendo and like how they kind of factor into the whole what to expect from companies thing. Let's get into it. Story number two, Nintendo must be stopped. That's what I titled this story, but I'm pulling from a new story from Andy Robinson at Video Gamers Chronicle, who writes about how Nintendo's been sending out a limitless amount of cease and desist. Nintendo has attracted criticism for targeting a fan who raised $10,000 for charity by selling custom Joy-Con shells. Content creator Captain Alex had created the Edicon controller shells in August 2019 in honor of popular Nintendo community figure Desmond Etika Amofa, who tragically took his own life earlier that year. All proceeds from the controller shells were reportedly donated to the JED Foundation, a mental health and suicide prevention charity. According to Alex, Etacons had generated over $10,000 for charity by the end of 2019. However, on Sunday, Alex confirmed to Joy-Con Boys, a YouTube channel created in memory of Etika, that Nintendo had sent him a cease and desist letter at the end of September, demanding that he stop selling the Etacons. Shortly after, Joy-Con Boys posted a video on the topic titled, Nintendo Hates Us. Nintendo even reportedly ordered a copyright strike against the channel. The news attracted a significant amount of criticism on Twitter, where both Nintendo and Etika were the top trending topics on Monday with over 150,000 tweets. And I noticed this last night as I was just scrolling through Twitter and I saw Nintendo trending and I was like, oh, Nintendo's trending. Must be a new direct. And I clicked it and I was like, oh, fuck, no, they are doing some shit over there. Tim, have you kept up with this at all? Do you know what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know,
how do you feel about it?
As always, Nintendo go Nintendo. And this, again, like I said earlier, this entire episode is a tale of what's right, what's being done, and what should be done. All of that, different things. Like, Nintendo obviously has the right to do this. On top of that, the dude that did this, Captain Alex, did not have the right to make these things. And whether it's for charity or no charity, whatever, it's like, you can't do that. Nintendo owns these copyrights. You can't do this. You can't sell that stuff. You can't, no matter what the cause, you just can't do it. But should you be able to? And yeah. Should Nintendo look the other way on this one?
Mm.
Like, those are very different statements. And, like, that's where this gets really kind of messy. And it's, like, especially when you're talking about situations that are, when you're attaching people like Etika with the situation that happened with him, somebody that is so intrinsically tied to Nintendo and, honestly, to the positivity of the image of Nintendo over the last decade, you know, for it to end as tragically as it did. And for all of this being on paper simply a good thing that's for a good cause that is in you know, respect and trying to better the situation, like to have a better tomorrow from what happened with Etika, like Nintendo should work with them to make this happen, right? Instead of working against them.
Yes. Yes.
But when you're Nintendo, you own the shit. And so why is this okay, but other things aren't okay? And if your answer is, oh, well, it's for a good cause, it's like, okay, but Nintendo should be the ones deciding that because they own that shit. And, like, that's the business side of it, and that's shitty, but why could they do that and so other people can't do stuff? It's like, oh, it's for free. We're not actually profiting off of it. It's like, well, you don't own the shit. So it's complicated, man.
It's complicated, but I feel like there is a right answer, and I think Nintendo's the ones who are in the wrong. Like, I get the idea of being a business and wanting to protect your property and wanting to protect your IP, but, like, people do this type of thing, right? Like, for other companies, right? Like, people make their own custom stuff. People sell custom creations for charity or for profit or whatever it may be, right? And I understand in certain situations being like, hey, we don't want you to profit off of a thing that is ours. And so we're going to put a stop to that. And, like, in some situations where, you know, people are, another Metroid 2 remake, for example, I kind of get that, okay, you guys are working on Samus Returns. I get how that's a conflict. But even then, it's like, how much harm is that doing? And for this specific in particular, for this situation in particular, right? Like, for something that is purely for charity and for something for somebody who was tied to your company, like in a, I guess in a cultural standpoint, right? Like, if for somebody, yeah, who was a YouTuber that was making content about your company and, like, for the situation around that, I feel like sending a cease and desist for something that made $10,000 for charity is just, like, it's in bad taste. And, like, again, I get it's complicated for Nintendo, but overall, I feel like this is just a bad taste decision. Like, just
I just want to be clear. It's only complicated because it goes back to what I'm saying about two things can be right at once, because mm-hmm. right doesn't always mean the same thing. It is right that Nintendo owns the rights to the stuff and other people cannot make things about it. That is right. Mm-hmm. That is a fact. There's no ways around that. It is also the right thing to let this happen because it is for a good cause that is not negatively affecting Nintendo at all. Both of those things are right, and they are contradicting.
Yeah. Unfortunate. And I hope to one day see Nintendo get better about this stuff. We'll see if that ever happens. Nintendo has been a stubborn company for a while when it comes to this type of thing. And again, I hope they have, like, a change of heart when it comes down to this, because it's unfortunate. Like, it's very I guess, unfortunate for a company that does so much good work. You know, like they put out games that have such strong connections with people. Like I talk a lot about how blown away I am whenever I see the sales numbers for the top selling Switch games, right? When you look at Mario Kart and you look at Animal Crossing and seeing the attachment rate for those games. And that very much speaks to how passionate people are for Nintendo and how much their fan base cares for those games and how much those games mean to them. And like for mm-hmm. Nintendo as a company to be like, cool, fuck y'all. Like I don't know, that just rubs me very much the wrong way. But again, you're right in terms of it being two things that are right colliding with each other, and one of those being the more powerful entity winning every single time.
Well, one of them being legal and one of them being yeah. a feeling and, you know, a moral thing. And it's like that gets extremely messy extremely fast, you know? And again, it's like, what would I do is a very different question than
what Nintendo would do.
What Nintendo would do or should do. And again, I think Nintendo should let them do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's
Nintendo
just,
go Nintendo.
Yeah, and it's not even just Nintendo go Nintendo. I don't want to just boil it down just to that. It's like, it's businesses are going to business, you know? And mm-hmm. like, at some
but
point...
But Nintendo
like,
does this more than the average business, I feel. Or at least the average business in this industry.
That's true, but that's also because more people are ripping off Nintendo's IPs than they are other IPs. That's just the thing. It's like, we see Nintendo taking shit down because more people are ripping off Nintendo's shit.
That's fair. I can see that.
But yeah, it's like, there needs to be some type of situation where this is figured out, where Nintendo's having an open dialogue with these guys and talking to them and being like, hey, okay, how do we make this a more official thing? Like, let's do that, you know? Because that's best case scenario from all of this.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and I'm sad that wasn't the route taken of, like, them hitting them up and being like, okay, how do we sell these? How do we partner with you guys to make this thing work? But again, maybe in the future we see things like that. Though, for the present, we have story number 3. Neil Druckmann has a new title. This is Wesley Yinpool at Eurogamer. Neil Druckmann is now co-president of Naughty Dog, the studio has announced. Druckmann joins Evan Wells at the top of the Sony-owned developer, which is famous for the Uncharted and the Last of Us series. Druckmann, who joined Naughty Dog in 2004, was the creative director and writer of 2013's The Last of Us, creative director and lead co-writer of 2016's Uncharted 4, and creative director and lead co-writer of 2020's The Last of Us Part 2. He served as vice president of Naughty Dog for almost 3 years. Allison Mori and Christian Geerling are the new vice presidents of Naughty Dog. Mori was the director of operations, and Geerling was the co-director of programming. Congratulations, Neil Druckmann.
Congrats all around to all these people. That's fantastic news, man.
Yeah. That's super awesome. What do you want next from Naughty Dog? I know we've had these conversations before.
Anything. Honestly, I trust them. It's like the thing that I want least is the thing that we're probably getting, which is factions from Last of Us. Like, I'm not interested in a multiplayer game from Naughty Dog. I know
how people
very much are, Sancho West and you. But any single player thing you can give me from Naughty Dog, I'm in. Whether it's Uncharted, Last of Us, new IP, hopefully new IP.
Yeah. They got to be working on new IP now, right? That's got to be the next thing.
Yeah.
You imagine
PS5
so.
PS5 game from the ground up, man.
Damn. Woo! That is actually very exciting. Do you have any thoughts on what that might be? I know I've given my Mission Impossible pitch which for like a awesome. Mission Impossible-esque game from Naughty Dog.
I love that.
Which
I love
still
that.
Have my fingers crossed for.
Yeah, that would be super rad. I don't know, man. Like, I think that Naughty Dog very much has a gameplay loop set that it is so heavily focused on shooting that what I'm about to say doesn't really make sense, but I think that they really pride themselves on the direction they took with Last of Us of kind of being a little bit more serious and having a story that matters more than the fast and furiousness of Uncharted, you know? And I can see them trying to like do something deep. Do something that's like a bit more like telling a real meaningful story that's character based and like, but that having to tie that to guns and shooting in a fun way is what like throws me off. And it's like, okay, maybe you're right, Bless. Maybe it is like a Mission Impossible type thing, because that would be really cool, and that could also have a cool deep story. But
of course, Uncharted 4 had a fun,
yeah, totally
story.
Yeah, but I'm excited. I think it's going to be a while till we hear anything, but I'm excited.
I feel like you have to have something to balance out the seriousness of The Last of Us, which is why that Last of Us Uncharted back and forth, I think, works so well, which is why I lean more toward a Mission Impossible thing. But like, I think it'd be fun to have for them to experiment with their game design, because I think since Uncharted 1, there's been this through line of, hey, we know what a Naughty Dog game is. It is you are going through these shooting corridors, and then you are going through these story segments, and then back into these shooting corridors, and then back and forth. And then also you're going to be doing these puzzles in between where you are moving a thing so that you and your companion can like hop up to the ledge, or your companion is like boosting you up. Like they have a set formula that I want to see them break, because I think Naughty Dog is so good at game design. I want them to do something new, because
keep evolving. We have had that, but I feel like even just playing Last of Us 2, you can, and when you play Last of Us 2 and go back to Uncharted, you see how far that it's come, and no one else has nailed that type of design. So it's like, I want to see more of that design. We don't have enough of it in games. So
I don't necessarily
need them to like reinvent the wheel. It's like, I would rather them like keep iterating and like make something freaking dope. I'm not asking for the same thing. I'm asking for if we keep getting things that are as big of a enhancement and leap as they have proven to do over the last six iterations of their games, like, I want more of this, man.
I mean, I don't disagree entirely, but I think for me, for Last of Us Part 2, one of my small complaints with that game was the fact that by the time I got halfway through, it had felt like I'd played that game before. Like, Last of Us Part 2 did certain things that I think up the ante in terms of what you expect from a Naughty Dog game. But all in all, like, when I made my way to an objective, right, like, I get to the location and I'm like, you know what, man, I bet when I get here, the front door is going to be blocked off. And sure enough, I get there, front door is blocked off. I have to like climb into a window that's on the roof in order to get to where I'm going. And then something else is going to derail me. Cool. Once I get past this thing, I'm sure there's going to be some landmark in the distance that my companion is going to point to and be like, oh, there's the thing we need to get to. And that ends up happening. And like, to a certain extent, the Naughty Dog games, I think, become predictable because their structure is so refined and has been the same throughout. I mean, since Uncharted 1, right? And like, they've made those small improvements that have been upping the ante. But I want to see them at least try to do something that is dynamically different in a way that shakes things up. But also, like, you know, I also want like a Last of Us 3 possibly, or like a new Uncharted one day, right? Like, I want them to come back to the formula, but for whatever the secondary game is, right, or the third series they're working on is, right, I want that to be all right, we're gonna make this back and forth a little bit more different and dynamic than what we've had with Uncharted and Last of Us.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I come from the perspective that as long as they're adequately rewarding you for that predictability, that's when it really matters, where it's just like that predictability is just to get you from point A to point B. But when point B is exciting and you want to know what point C is immediately, like, that's when it's like, all right, this is good game design. You did it. You got me hooked. And Last of Us 2 to me is a perfect example of them. Like, I don't know how they could do better at that. Like, it really got me where I needed, like, oh man, the front door is blocked off, but I need to get to that goddamn building. So I'm doing this. Like, that's enticing. But
we shall see. I'm excited for whatever Naughty Dog's next game is.
Hell yeah.
Story number four. Epic won't hold in-person Fortnite events in 2021. This is Marie D'Alessandri at GamesIndustry.biz. Epic Games announced it won't organize any in-person Fortnite events in 2021 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Epic said its priority is the health and safety of both its staff and Fortnite players, and that there is too much uncertainty about the situation to guarantee either for the foreseeable future. Quote, with so much still unknown about what is practical and safe, we do not plan to hold in-person events in 2021, including a Fortnite World Cup, the announcement read. It continues, we'll continue to provide online competitions throughout 2021 with the hopes that physical events in some form can return at some point in the future, end quote. So where PAX says they'll possibly be coming back in 2021, Epic decides no for their Fortnite events. Tim, what do you think events will look like in 2021, and also, like, does this surprise you? How do you react to this Fortnite thing?
I think Fortnite's making the right move. Epic's making the right move here. It's like, we can't be planning live events right now. It's silly, it's stupid, it's irresponsible, and I think that all of that can change within a moment's notice. That moment hasn't come yet, and that moment doesn't seem like it's coming anytime soon. All the talk of vaccine, all the talk of, you know, distributing it, all of that, that all needs to happen before we're talking about doing major events. Like, period. PAX is insane for announcing dates. I understand that they did it with a lot of asterisks and a lot of like,
yeah, if it's a lot of wishful blah, thinking. Blah, blah,
blah, a lot of wishful thinking. That's not what we need right now. It's like, that is so business minded where, again, this goes back to the same shit. They can do it. They're in their right to do it. But like, it's a bad look and they shouldn't be doing it. And the moral side of it is they shouldn't be doing this.
Do you think we're going to start to get, I know like this is me asking questions that we do not have the answers for, but do you think there's some form of video game events making a return in 2021?
I do think so. If I had to guess, and at this point, who the fuck am I? But like, I would have never thought we'd be where we're at now, like this far into it. Like, this happened in March and it is now December and we're still at home. I think we're going to be at home for a long time to come. But I imagine that I wouldn't be surprised if PAX West happens.
And that would be like in September.
September. Yeah. But I also wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be the earliest thing that we actually get.
Yeah. I somewhat agree. I would be surprised. I'd be surprised for PAX, for as big of an event that is. I'd be a bit surprised if we get there, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are similar events, but of a way smaller scale that happen later on next year, where it is, if you know, there's a vaccine and all this stuff, right? Like, I think more contained stuff might start to make a comeback, but even like outside of that, right? Like, I think now that we've been here for 75% of the year, I think companies have had enough time to like figure out what that stuff looks like for them and what even online events look like for them. And so like, for whatever Evo might be next year, I don't even know if Evo, where Evo stands or if that's made a comeback, because I know they had some stuff go down in July, but like whatever events like that, right, look like fighting game events, esports tournaments, what that stuff looks like in 2021, I imagine at the very least, that stuff will feel more refined and thought through more than this year, right? Because a lot of this stuff kind of blindsided us.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
We shall see. Tim, of course, this is where I'd give a segue, talk about something that's in the flung future, right? And then be like, oh yeah, but this is what I want to know what's out today, and I'd give you the thing to read. But before we get there, I want to tell you about our sponsor, of course. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Quip. There are only two types of people in the world, those of us who brush and floss every day and those who might just start, thanks to Quip's new refillable floss pick. You know Quip, the electric toothbrush you hear about all the time, but it's their sleek, reusable floss pick you'll want to use next. The durable handle is easy to guide, restrings with a click, and comes with a compact mirrored dispensing case for on the go. Pair your floss with the perfect electric toothbrush for adults and kids. Quip has the simple guiding features you need, like timed sonic vibrations with guided pulses to help you brush better. You can personalize your routine with over 9 premium brush colors, plus anti-cavity toothpaste for every taste in mint and watermelon. And now you can get amazing rewards for just brushing your teeth better every day. Quip Smart electric toothbrushes connect to the free Quip app, so you can earn rewards like free products and discounts. Quip also delivers brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills every 3 months from $5. Shipping is free, so you can save money and skip the store. Bring delight to your everyday brushing and join over 5 million mouths brushing with Quip, starting at $25. And if you go to getquip.com/games right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/games, spelled getquip.com/games. Quip, better oral health made simple. Getquip.com/games. We're also brought to you by Trojan Tantrix Pleasure Sleeve. While your hands get it done, and frankly, it's always going to be there, there's a new and, dare we say, more exciting way to masturbate. Introducing Trojan Tantrix, the new sex toy for the boys. Introducing the new Trojan Tantrix Pleasure Sleeve, a handheld, soft, textured sheet. Like, really, really soft. Tantrix is designed to enhance the sensation of each stroke with textured ridges for max pleasure. Since it fits in your hand, you already know how to use it. You just do what you normally do. You have a full range of motion, so you can adjust your grip and pressure to stimulate where you want. Use with a water-based lube. Use Tantrix for solo pleasure, to take pleasure into your own hands. Or spice up the elusive hand job and use it with your partner. With
Trojan... I have done both of these things. I just want to let you know.
Tim, tell me about it.
Both of these things with this Trojan Tantrix pleasure sleeve, and I could not recommend it higher. This is something that all you boys out there, all you men out there, you got to at least give it a try. Give it a shot. You don't know what you're missing, man.
Tim, I know every now and then sponsors mm-hmm. will send us products to test out so we can talk about them on the show. I'm going to need a shipment of Trojan Tantrix Pleasure Sleeve. Please and thank you.
I'll get right on it. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it. With Trojan Tantrix, there's a better way to do it. So head to Amazon, Walmart, or Walmart.com and make masturbation so much more. Mm-hmm. I've never loved an ad so much. We're also brought to you by BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly videos or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit the website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Visit betterhelp.com/games. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for Kind of Funny Games Daily listeners. Get 10% off get 10% off your first order or your first month at betterhelp.com/games. That is 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/games. What a transition between ads, you know what I mean?
I love it.
I almost didn't keep it together from the Trojan Tantrix to BetterHelp. That was a tough one, but we made
Warthog 155 in the chat says that shit caught me off guard. I got tears from laughing so hard.
I almost lost it.
We've done it, man. Kind of Funny, we fucking made it, man. Me and Nick had to put in so much work in the early years of Kind of Funny to get this. We finally made it. We made it all the way here. Get that.
That wasn't a joke, by the way. I do want a delivery.
Oh, of course you Tantrix. Do. Why wouldn't
Please.
You?
Please. I just need to know. Tim, very mm-hmm. excited for that delivery, but I'm sure it's going to take a little bit of time for it to get here. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and grab shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show host each and every weekday.
Do 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 yeah.
Real quick.
What's up?
I saw Jeff Grubb was in the chat earlier. I don't know if he still is, but if he is, I still don't know if Cyberpunk 2077 is playable in 5120x1440p. And I need to know.
Damn, you're trying to live in that world.
I'm trying to fucking live.
You're trying to live.
Jeff Grubb, if you're in the chat, if you can look that up, because I know you have a super ultra-wide monitor.
You're going to have like a 360 view. I would really appreciate it. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, let's go, baby.
Let's go. Out today, we got Drawn to Life, Two Realms for Switch and PC, Slapshot Rebound for PC, Monster Sanctuary for PC, Switch, Xbox One, and PS4, Wallace and Gromit's Grand Adventures for PC on Steam, GOG.com, Robot Cash, and Green Man Gaming. And then Labyrinth of Legendary Loot is available on itch.io. New dates for you. The first round of community-created gear will be coming to Skater XL on PS4, Xbox One, and PC on December 16th. Rust Console Edition has been delayed to 2021. And then Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game complete edition, releases January 14th. Deal of the day for you, Killer Queen Black joins Xbox Game Pass on January 5th.
Yo, that game needs that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because when I was playing on the Switch, there just wasn't enough people playing. It coming to Game Pass, that could be a game changer for it, man. What a fantastic video game.
I was about to ask, like, oh, do you still go to arcade and bars and play that game? But then I realized that, like, that's probably not an option. But that's actually great that it's on. I know it's been on consoles for a couple years now, but for it to come to get Xbox Game Pass is going to be the boost that game, I'm sure, needs during mm-hmm. these trying times. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to get your questions read on the show, just like Benjamin Barry did. Benjamin Barry writes in and says, "Hey, Blessing and Tim, on this week of the Game Awards, what version do you consider when judging? This question comes from a comment that Tim made a few weeks ago about Ori and how his review would have been higher if the performance improvements we see on the Xbox Series versions were in the game when he originally played it. Map coming up instantly, no hiccups during gameplay, etc. We can use Ori as an example, but the question is more of a general one. When the issues of a game has are fixed, when the issues a game has are fixed at a later date, but within the same year it released, should the best version of a game be considered when award seasons come around?"
That's an excellent question. And I think that it varies person to person, outlet to outlet. And I think that every outlet kind of has their own kind of scale that they come up with, and like there's rules that they follow in terms of like how their game of the year and how the awards and all that stuff works. When it comes to Kind of Funny, when it comes to me personally, I look at this as the Game Awards, and talking about Game of the Year specifically, like that award, it's a mix of both. It's kind of like where the game is, because I can like easily look back and understand where Ori is now, and it's solving the problems that I had, but it still had the problems when I played it. And so when we're talking about the game in the year, that's when I experienced the game in that year. So it's kind of a mix of the entire experience of what that game means. It's not just the quality of the game, it's your experience with the game. So I think that when we're doing a lot of these voting things, Game of the Year doesn't just mean the best game of the year. It is, Game of the Year involves conversation. It involves like the you know, kind of understanding about the game and the general consensus and all this stuff. Like, it's a different question than what is the best video game.
Yeah, no, and for sure I think it is about what the story of that game is, not like the literal like narrative mm-hmm. in the game, but the story of what that game's kind of gone through over the course of the year, right? And it's like, for me, it's hard for me to judge Ori in terms of like an objective, like how good is this game in December 2020 sense, because I played that game and finished that game and haven't touched that game since like March when it came out, or April, I forget which. Or no, it would have been like, was it February?
It was early March. It was supposed to be February, but it got pushed to early March.
Because I remember reviewing that game in the studio. And so no. I guess, yeah, that would have been early March. Yeah. Wow. I think we reviewed that in the studio. Yeah, like,
damn,
that's wild that it was that long ago that that game came out. But Ori in particular, I think, is an interesting one, because games... Again, and this kind of comes back to the cyberpunk conversation. Games are such complicated things, right? To where for Ori, like my critiques of it were, yeah, like the game's performance wasn't, I think, where it needed to be at launch. But then also, like, there are these small things that like Metroidvanias I think could improve on, that I think Ori and the Will of the Wisps didn't necessarily do in terms of, hey, let me like write on my map so I know that I'm not going into the same dead end a billion times in a row, right? Like, let me mark things on the map. How can we change the Metroidvania formula up a little bit so that this game doesn't feel like previous games of its same genre? Granted, like Ori and the Will of the Wisps, still like a fantastic game, still incredible. The art is still wonderful. The story is still touching, all this stuff. But when we talk about how complicated and complex games are as a thing, you know, there's so many things that go into it along with performance that turns that into a broader conversation in terms of, hey, this is now, they fixed the bugs, and so now this game is perfect, right? Like that's not necessarily the case in every game. Cyberpunk is one that I'm curious to see, because I think for how prevalent the discussion is around bugs in Cyberpunk, I imagine by this time next year, a lot of that stuff is going to be dealt with and hopefully fixed. And what does that do in terms of the 2021 Game of the Year discussion, right? When it comes to the Game Awards, that's what I'm curious to see.
Oh, that is very interesting.
Yeah. That's so far away, though.
It is. You know, I wanted to know what was coming up.
We shall see. I got another question here from Mango JR, who writes in and says, "Good morning, friends. Nicholas Doucette from Japan Studios."
Kev, can you bring up the video on assets?
Nicholas sure. Doucette from Japan Studios noted the success they've noticed of Astro's Playroom. Oh, do we have like breaking news or something? What's going on?
No. I wanted to show that, yes, Ori review was in fact in the studio. And I just brought it up for a second. And it was bizarre to look at. It's just such a weird, weird thing that we used to do
that Kevin has on screen now. God, it feels so weird. Yeah, looking at us sitting in a studio. That's hilarious. Man. How times have
changed.
The
video wall was so cool.
Man, I can't wait to be sitting in front of a video wall again.
Remember when Imran would walk in and I'd be painted as the Martian Manhunter and he'd look at us and be like, shake his head, just kind of walk away.
You'll love to see it.
Mango JR Mongo writes in and says, morning friends, Nicholas Doucet from Japan Studios noted the success they've noticed of Astro's Playroom, both with fans and critics. Though he said they have no plans for a sequel, he made it seem like it could happen if fans wanted enough. I'm curious if you guys would like to see a sequel or some sort of DLC. If so, what do you think it would take to get us that sequel? And what would you like to see in it? I know Bless mentioned at one point an Astrobot 2 without VR would be ideal. I wonder what else can make that game even better. Keep killing it, Mango JR. I remember there was a PlayStation blog a few weeks ago where they were talking about the launch of Astro's Playroom. And towards the end of it, they mentioned that Astro will be back with news soon. And so Nicholas's quote here, I think, is kind of contradictory to that. And so I wonder what that's about. But to the general question of what do we want to see from an Astro sequel, Tim, I know you liked Astro's Playroom. What do you want to see?
I loved Astro's Playroom. And this is a tough one because I don't know that a sequel can live up to what I'd expect from it. Like the PlayStation nostalgia that they added into it was such a big part in my overall enjoyment of the game. I think that what I'd love to see is a doubling down and making a full game out of the use of the DualSense. Like focus on the gimmicks, go extra hard onto it because they did a good job in Astro's Playroom. But do that in a way that adds a bit more to the actual platforming of it. Like I think the platforming was fairly simple. There wasn't really much of a challenge in Astro's Playroom, which is totally fine. But I would like to see them kind of, from everything I've heard about Astro Bot with VR, take the VR side out of it and add in intense DualSense integrations.
I'm kind of split with where I want Astro to go at this point, because since Astrobot Rescue Mission, I've wanted a full sequel to that game, and I've wanted something that feels standalone, separate from what Astro's Playroom is, which is very tech demo-ish in terms of what it actually is, but still feels full and vibrant and lovable and all this stuff. Coming out of Astro's Playroom, immediately I was like, oh man, I want a full Astro game now. I want something that doesn't even have to like deal with the PlayStation nostalgia. I want something that lets Astro stand alone as its own platforming entity. The more I've had to stew on it and the more I've had to think about it, I wonder if it's worth letting Astro live as this thing to embody what PlayStation is as a brand and to like to carry that flag of, okay, yeah, this is going to be very tech demo-ish in terms of displaying the technology. Like I'm sure when PS5 Pro comes out, like we're gonna put an Astrobot alongside that to display the benefits of PS5 Pro. Like I could see a legitimate avenue for Astrobot being that, and it still being this lovable thing that we all like and that brings life and personality to the PlayStation brand. On the other hand, I also would like Astrobot to be this Crash Bandicoot or this Spyro the Dragon or this Ratchet and Clank, where it is, all right, make their own games. You know, like let them live as their own platformers and make them these 10-hour experiences where you're making your way through these different levels. And because they're on console as opposed to like VR, they are more open and they are more explorable and all this stuff. I think either avenue for that could work, or maybe a mixture of the two. Who knows? Yeah. But I mean, all I know about Astro at this point is that I don't think Astro is going anywhere. We're going to get more Astro. Like that is Astro is a thing that I think everybody objectively is like, no, this is awesome. We want more of this.
Yeah.
And I think PlayStation understands that that is a quality product. That is a quality studio doing quality work, and they should not let that go.
I'm going to say something that is probably unpopular. I haven't seen anyone say this. I think that the aesthetic of Astro is fantastic. The music is so killer and really adds to the experience. The sound design, all of that's so great. I hate Astro's design. Hate it.
Why?
The character, it just bothers me.
What's wrong with you? What is wrong
with
you?
I don't like how round his legs are. It's off-putting. It's weird. I don't like the dancing. I don't like
You don't like the dancing?
I don't like Astro.
Why do you have to be so mean all of the time?
Do you, Kevin? Do you?
Yeah, I love it. So cute. I wish I had a little one dancing on my desk right now. I'd throw little coins at him, and he'd probably shake it. Oh, my God. My Astro is a stripper.
Oh, man. I mean, I respect it, but I think Astro is fucking lovely. I love how Astro looks in the game.
I want.
What are you looking for?
I want to pull up some images. I want to.
Okay, we're doing like a deep dive into Astral's visual design. I like this.
Yeah,
this is the deep dive content that I know people like to tune in for.
All right, Kev. There's two links there. If you could bring them up, please.
You don't like how round he is?
I don't like how round he is.
How do you feel about Pokemon design? Because Pokemon design, I have a similar critique when it comes to like starters and stuff. I don't like how round those things are, but. I feel like it's like
so funny.
Wait, I'm sorry. Are you one of these people that like push for the thin Pikachu? You one of them fat chambers?
No, thin him out. No, I like chunky Pikachu.
Yeah, you should.
But like,
he's good.
But nowadays, every Pokemon just looks like they were fucking like they were birthed out of pillows or something. Like they're just so round and like cute and I don't know, man. I want more Charizards. I want more like. Even Dragonite
You want Digimon, is what you want. You want over-designed ass motherfucker. No, I'm just playing with you.
Yeah, a little bit.
Kev, can you bring up the other picture first?
What other picture? It's the only one I saw.
The first. There's two links I sent. The first link.
There's, like, no space between them, so it's really hard to...
That's the same picture. Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Yeah. Look at his weird-ass legs, man.
They're finger
What's
legs.
What's wrong with his legs?
They're finger legs. What's wrong with that?
Because they shoot lasers. Round.
Nah,
they're
man.
No, I'm down with the lack of the feet.
Thick thighs save lives, Tim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know, but like, so there's something about this that it's just like, I don't know, man. But I do like the Miles Morales 2020
the digitized LED face.
Digitized eyes and stuff. That's that I'm okay with. But his limbs, I just don't like his limbs.
Look at his little hands. He's got two little fingers.
His limbs are awesome.
I don't like his attitude.
You don't like his attitude?
Yes, he does. No. He's lying. Tim loves his attitude. There's no way.
Go to the other picture. You ain't that cute,
we gotta
cute,
put
bro.
Out like a poll
what?
Or something to see how people
no,
feel
I
about
know I'm
Astro.
Wrong. I know. Again, I know this is
you
unpopular.
Ain't that cute. Saying. You're looking at this guy and you're saying you ain't that cute. What is wrong with you? You're the devil.
I don't like him.
Mm-mm. What about the antenna? Do you like the antenna that like
I
pops
don't,
out of his head?
I really don't like the antenna.
Now, are the people seeing this, Tim?
I'm Kevin.
Or not Tim, Kevin. The thing you're looking
it.
On Twitter. Wait,
it.
What is it? Because I can't see. Do you mean to be showing this?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Yeah, okay. Greg Miller tweeted out, quote, I don't like how round his legs are, end quote. Is at Tim Gettys talking about Astrobot or kind of funny Kevin? Right now, the winning vote is Kevin. That's
yep.
great.
Yep.
My legs are where I get a lot of my strength.
Now it's time to squad up. Of course, you can write in, let us know what you're playing, and we'll squad you up with the best friends. Long Schlong Silver writes in with a squad up on PC and says, hey, KFGD, I'm looking for some best friends to collaborate with in Fuser. I've been obsessed with the game since it came out, and I'd love to drop some beats with the fam. People can find me on Steam via The Glizzy. That's username The Glizzy. All caps, T-H-E space G-I-L. I-Z-Z-Y. Tim, do you know what a glizzy is?
Hot dog.
Correct. I'm glad you know that, because like not enough people know about the glizzies.
I don't understand where it came from, and I don't understand, like, was this always a thing, or is this just now people are...
Oh, no, man. The glizzies have always been with us. I heard about glizzies from TikTok.
So did I.
I'm sure they existed. I'm sure they were probably part of some cultural slang somewhere, and then TikTok took it and ran with it.
How did the
I just
long...
am happy that hot dogs are like back in the world.
Wait, were they out?
Are you a big hot dog fan? I don't really like hot dogs that much.
In terms of popularity,
I feel similarly about hot dogs that you
I
feel
can
about
talk
Astrobot.
My shit about Astro's design, but you better get your hot dog slandered the fuck out of here. Okay,
oh, man, hot dogs suck, man.
Oh my god.
Hot dogs.
Well,
hold on.
Bless, did you try the cheeseburger hot dog that I told you about?
No, because it looked like death.
Okay.
Yeah, Kevin was telling me the other day while we were playing Fortnite, he was telling me about this 7-Eleven cheeseburger hot dog, which is basically a hot dog with the meat of a cheeseburger, and it looked disgusting.
Just so you know, Tim Gettys knows about it. I forced Tim Gettys to be late multiple times because I saw a 7-Eleven that I wanted to go see if they had a cheeseburger hot dog.
Just to check if they had it. And we would go to 7-Elevens all around the city just to find the elusive cheeseburger hot dog.
Remember that time we were going to
Alexis's
house, and I was like, hey, hold up, they got a hot dog right here.
And then we went and we
my
found
it.
Hurts they had the cheeseburger hot
it's
dog.
It's so good.
No, dude, it was dope. But like that, I'm so angry at this whole conversation right now. Bless
chili and cheese like, on that bad boy.
It's not. And here's the thing: it's not all hot dogs that I hate. It's just like the default fucking glizzy hot dogs that I just don't. I don't fuck with. Like I can do what's the other kind of wiener called? Kevin, you would
Polish,
know. Like the bigger,
Polish,
more
Polish.
Polish. Sausage. Yeah, I can do. I can do Polish hot
Bratsworth?
Dogs. Yes, Bratsworth is actually what I was thinking of. Yeah, those I fuck with. Those are actually pretty delicious. It's those, just like those thin fucking.
You're gonna like the 7-Eleven cheeseburger hot dog.
Greg Miller's gonna say something about being from Chicago.
How do you feel about a Portillo's hot dog? That's all I wanna know.
I tried a Portillo's hot dog, I think maybe once in my life. And I thought it was cool. I think I liked it fine.
All right,
a Portillo's hot dog is a hot dog.
Yeah, that's standard
hot dog.
It's even one of your little baby hot dogs. It's real thin. You put shit on it to make it better. Right? It's like a thinner, smaller
I guess,
dog.
Maybe?
It's
Greg,
not
is
like
a Portillo's hot dog. Just
it's
a hot
not
dog?
The big one you're getting at 7-Eleven for $1.50.
You know, it's a Vienna beef hot dog. It's one of those things. Dick Portillo years ago had a very specific spice blend. He had Vienna beef make for him that he uses and has that snap of the skin. You know what I mean? Like that's what it's all about in that taste.
Yeah,
it's not like a ballpark Frank. It's not like what you're just going to get if you get like the package out of the grocery store. Or
I think that's more so what I'm referring to is like that default thing you buy at the grocery store that is thin and like a light brown
color. That's exactly
and you put ketchup
on it. That's exactly what you guys are talking about.
From Portillo's?
But I just talked about how it's got a different spice.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's got
it.
A little bit of a
love
a thicker
and care.
Skin. A little
yeah,
bit of skin.
It's the same
this isn't fucking Michael Jordan out there barbecuing on a 4th of July. There's a ball for
like, here's the thing. It looks gross.
Nationwide.
It
I'm
looks
sure.
gross. It looks gross. Like, I what know the gross? Cheeseburger hot dog looks gross.
It looks disgusting.
But that looks like diarrhea as soon as you get home.
God, no. That well,
yes.
No, it isn't.
This
it
is
isn't.
What, this is what Kevin was
and
then trying
you put
to get
the
me to
chili
eat.
And cheese. They've got
oh
sauerkraut
God,
on here. Don't
disgusting.
Do the sauerkraut.
You know what I mean?
You put the chili cheese on top of the cheeseburger bite. And I know it looks gross. I guarantee you a good fucking time. You're going to eat this and you're going to feel better about everything. It's like heroin in a lot of ways.
Anyway, some hot dogs are created better than others, is I think where we're coming down here. Anyway, you can play with Long Silver at the Glizzy on Steam on PC. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in and listen to what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Let's see here.
Foodie and Fitz's go back to jerk off sleeves. I love our jobs, bless.
Big Bad Beluga says, bless the bar. Big Bad Beluga is the homie, so he's telling me specifically about an experience we had. He says, bless the bar we used to go to for Killer Queen hosts COVID-compliant tournament nights once a month, a small way to keep the bar alive in tough times. So there you go. You can still find ways to play Killer Queen if you want. People are telling me what bratwursts are. I do know what bratwursts are.
Yeah.
And I do like bratwurst better than
I feel like
just
a bratwurst
default.
Is a lot closer to the cheeseburger hot dog than a hot dog.
I agree.
I mean, to be fair, the cheeseburger hot dog I'd probably have over a regular hot dog.
I'm telling you, you're going to have a good time. And if I remember correctly, the 7-Eleven closest to your home has the cheeseburger hot dog. If not, I can take you to a very lovely 7-Eleven in Pacifica that most certainly has it.
All right, here we go. Kind of Steven mentions Captain Alex, who we were talking about in the Joy-Con Nintendo discussion, says Captain Alex does not make the Joy-Cons. He just paints them. There's no copyright infringement here. He is customizing Joy-Cons. He purchases and then sells the artwork on the Joy-Cons themselves. I believe that would be then like reselling, which I don't know if
that. I mean, that's
you can do.
Isn't
can
that
you?
The same as buying a blank canvas, painting on it, and then selling the canvas? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I guess, man.
That seems like once you own it, you can do something. Like you could lick it and then sell it for more money. Like that's not illegal.
I think
it
probably comes down to like how you like what. When you make like an online store or something, I'm sure there's something that Nintendo's latching onto with the redistribution of their product where they're like, no, you're not allowed to do this because you're basically selling custom Joy-Cons. But again, let them do it. Just let them do it. Just let them get away with it.
Do it.
Let them do it. This week's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily go like this. Tomorrow, it's me and Imran. Wednesday, Greg and Gary Witta. Thursday, Greg and Tim. And then Friday is Greg and me. If you're watching this live on Twitch right after this, is Karate Kid 2 in review?
Hell yeah, it is, dude. We're going to Japan, baby.
Going to Japan. Of course, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindafunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.